Well, thank you, Tim, Julian, and Greg, for the very enlightening and entertaining talks and the fascinating insights. I would now like to invite Miguel Anjos to the podium. Miguel is professor and Canada Research Chair at Polytechnique and a member of GERARD, a multi-university research center. He is the director of the Institut de l'Energie Trottier, and Miguel will moderate the question and answer session. Over to you, Miguel.
Thank you, Shubhashish. We now have some time for questions. Julian is with us. Julie, can you hear me? Okay, good. So he can hear us. Now, we couldn't hear him, so I assume he will be on the speaker if he wants to speak. Questions may be asked in English or in French. Alors, si vous voulez poser des questions en français, n'hésitez pas. There are microphones in the aisle. If you wish to ask a question, I encourage you to make your way to the microphones and take your turn. And because we do get always a certain number of questions, I ask you to keep your questions brief and to the point. If at all possible, keep yourself to one question and make it clear so that our panelists can address it for you. And I now invite Lauren Trottier to ask the first question.
Okay. Hope you can hear me there. So we heard quite a few interesting things from the speakers today about how there actually are some pretty interesting ideas and solutions for the issue of sustainability, things like some very dramatic improvements in efficiencies for houses, for cars, how to use a lot less materials, how to recycle materials, how to extend product life cycles, and so on and so forth. So there seems to be a lot of technical solutions that have been developed that are may even be ready to be used. But one of the themes that came up on our roundtable today, which I'll ask the panelists here, is how do we get society and the public to embrace these things and start using them on a scale that will make a big difference?
Anyone wants to take up that question among the panelists?
I'll
it's
start.
A good one. Greg? Yeah.
So I think one of the things we could do is we need to do more with regard to our policies. And that happens everything from international policy to deal with climate change to federal policy, state policy or provincial policy, down to municipalities, down to university administration, because we need to be sending the right signals in the marketplace about the price of energy, the price of materials. So climate policy, carbon tax would be something that would change the whole value of our energy and our materials. And there's a lot we could do with regulations as well that we're not doing to create the right incentives, putting a proper price on materials, making virgin materials really the true cost versus what we pay for them now versus recycled materials, putting more incentives in place to encourage adoption of the technologies to get over this problem with initial cost, high cost of more sustainable products, which result in a lower life cycle cost and a lower footprint as well. So I think there's a tremendous amount we could do in terms of policy and planning, but it takes leadership that we sort of lack. And so I think what everybody could do is vote for better leadership. I'll end with that.
Tim?
Just a brief comment. Policies are hard to implement if the people are not behind you. So we need, there's two ways you can go. If we could implement a carbon tax, people would immediately get the sense of how carbon is connected to their life. They would get that feedback in a very real way. But that's a very, apparently, very difficult thing to do politically. So the other option is to do these complicated modeling exercises where you try to figure it out and then simplify it so that you can let people know what these consequences are. I think people don't know that. I think we have some very marvelous technologies today that sort of give people maybe a false sense that we can do anything. But it's all built on some very basic things that often come from very far away, and we're often clueless what that connection is. So education, informing people in different ways will have to be part of it, and working together we can then implement these policies. We'll have more popular support. Another comment that came up earlier today, and it was the topic of yesterday, which I think is right, is that in smaller groups you can get more, such as cities, you know, the individual citizens, I think, have more voting rights. Okay, and I think that it might grow up that way from smaller entities. You can see many examples in the United States where we're not going to pass any recycling programs, national recycling programs, anytime soon, or energy policy. But statewide, state by state, that's happening. That can happen city by city, state by state. There's more unity in those kinds of communities. So I think that's a way to go too.
Julian, did you want to comment?
Yeah, thanks. I agree entirely with where Tim ended there, but to be a little bit controversial, I disagree about the carbon price. I think it's time we abandoned that as a discussion point. We've had it for 25 years as the main target of all international policy negotiations. At the moment, the carbon price in Europe is zero. And it's always going to work that way because the carbon price will penalize those who have the most to gain from increased energy use. So they're always going to vote against it. It requires a consensus that can never exist. So instead, we need some combination of social protest and regulation. Politicians will only put in regulation if they believe that we won't vote them out at the next election. So they need confidence that we're going to support them. And I think on a small scale, that involves social protest movements trying to point towards a different agenda, and that's partly what I think Tim was hoping for with talking about education. There are opportunities to think about social leadership as well, and in the area of buildings, I'm putting a lot of effort into trying to find lead users of good design principles. So I've just spent a year with one of our supermarket chains working on a design for a completely reusable supermarket store so that after the store becomes redundant in 20 years, the entire fabric can be shifted somewhere else. And even though that was going to cost them more, they were quite interested in doing that because it would generate some social cachet. And I think there are other examples where wealthy individuals who can make have the potential to take leadership in doing things which are a little bit more expensive now, but where there is a sense of personal value or fulfillment in doing the right thing.
Thank you. We have two microphones, so we'll take turns at each microphone line, starting with the gentleman at the front here.
It seems to me that the problem goes beyond technology and money to the question of human dignity. We have to go, not only have sustainable, more sustainable cities and industries, but more life-inducing homes and workplaces and hospitals. It's a question of what you're aiming for. Are you aiming to have a more efficient building, or are you aiming to have a more life-affirming dwelling? And it seems to me that too many people, including engineers, including business developers, are interested in the technological aspect rather than in the lifelong question. And how does one change that attitude is the question, as a profession, as a society.
Yes, Julian, go ahead.
I couldn't agree more. I think I absolutely agree with what you've said. If we are to attain a sustainable society, it is about human identity. And I think what that requires us to do as engineers is to engage far outside every comfort zone we've ever had. I've noticed that in the last year, I rarely go into a meeting now with more than education from the age of 13, as I try to find ways to talk to sociologists, political scientists, economists, and so on. And even though it's desperately uncomfortable doing it, I see no choice if we're going to make progress. So we have to find new forms of dialogue. And I think our role as engineers is relatively restricted because there isn't a technological fix. But we are useful because without us, there's a danger that everybody else will start believing media fictions about what technology might deliver. So I think we have a useful role in keeping everybody else's feet on the ground, but certainly not to say that we've got the answer.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? No?
That's good.
I can just briefly comment. I mean, I completely agree with you, too. It's a multifaceted problem. We're engineers, and so we talk engineering. But I don't think we want to give the impression that that's the solution domain. And I have to say, quite frankly, in my class, often I say to myself, am I teaching engineering, or I think what I'm trying to teach is how to be a good global citizen. And I think we have to be able to do that in engineering classes and all of our classes.
And we also have to change the norms in terms of what we aspire to. You know, we value, you know, in society we look up to people with big homes. You know, we got to change that. If you could live in a smaller home, you should be, you know, praised rather than, you know, aspire to that rather than aspire to bigger, and, you know.
If I may just add one very brief comment, it seems that one of the things wrong with our medical profession, for example, is instead of worrying about health, they concentrate only on disease. And I think the same is true in many of the other aspects of our society. We have to look at something in a more positive, global sense and not just simply get stuck in the corners. Thank you.
We'll move to the first person at the back microphone.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for three excellent presentations. And it seems to me that as architects or planners or engineers, we're relegated to applying superficial solutions to symptoms of the problem, where the fundamental problem is basically an economic system which has as an imperative constant, continual growth. All the problems that you highlighted today basically stem to the point that there is an industry with an army of advertisers pushing for more and more consumption. And given that mainstream economists have caused more damage to the planet and more suffering to humanity than any other group, it seems to me that as architects, planners, and engineers, we should take over the domain of building a better economic system. Thank you.
Okay, we'll move to microphone at the front. Please go ahead.
I'd like to thank the speakers for showing that there is some hope, but also there is an enormous problem to achieve, and that it is probably at the political level, both municipal, provincial, and federal. But I would like to know how we are going to mobilize our student population, both engineers and those of other stripes, to be evangelists and to emissaries for this sustainability, to achieve this, to ask our politicians, what do we ask our politicians and what message do we give them to convince them to come up with this solution?
Anyone wants to take that up? Great.
Definitely, great. The students are the hope, and that's why I teach. You know, these problems are enormous, but I'm an optimist because of what I see in terms of the bright minds and the motivation And we just got to get out of the way of these students in terms of what they want to achieve and support them. And that gets into not just doing academic exercises, but experiential learning, getting them to work, giving them the opportunity to work on projects in the community, field-based research where they could actually demonstrate models and systems that are improvements. Working on the laboratory of the university is also very important. So I think that the students are actually ahead of the faculty in many ways in terms of recognizing the urgency and having the enthusiasm for transformation. And I think we're engineers, we get into the design in that, but I think in terms of policy, I think getting our policy students involved and, you know, being involved in testimonials or about regulations, about opportunities, active engagement is where we need to go in the university system.
Julian?
Yeah, thank you. I thought both questions were excellent. The first question, I talked about growth as the problem, and I couldn't agree more. I'm not only now becoming brave enough to say it, but I cannot see green growth as two words that we can fit together. If we measure GDP as our only metric of success, it has to decline. So I think one of the priorities we have is to find other metrics of success, for example, related to the capital goods that we own or the way that we use time, where we can show improvement in those while trading off against a decline in GDP. But in mobilizing the students, my experience is that that's not a problem. They're queuing up wanting to join in with this. And especially at the PhD level, which are the engine of the activity that I run, I find very, very good students wanting to come and join in with this because they get it. And even on graduating from the PhD, they're finding the career is there, that there's a growing need in companies for people who've really thought about these ideas. I was thinking that the hardest question that you didn't ask is, how do we persuade engineers to take on the appalling career of becoming a politician? And that's something I truly can't envisage doing for myself. But actually, we do have a problem in the UK that I think we have one engineer in the Houses of Parliament out of 660 members of Parliament. I don't know how many engineers you've got in Congress there, but maybe we have to try and gird the loins of our students to face even that if they want to make a difference.
Thank you. Okay, we move on to the next question. We'll go to the microphone at the back.
Thank you. First of all, I just want to mention that I'm really happy that we are not focused on only technologies matters, but we brought up the debate over philosophical things such as we should change our ways of thinking and acting. And I want to relate that to two definitions. First, maybe you know of them, but I just want to remind it. I think we have a misconception of what economy is. First of all, economy comes from the Greek ekos and nomios, which means basically home maintenance, which means taking care of your habitat. It doesn't really mean exchange of products for profit at all. That's the first. Ecology, home science, the science of your habitat. So whether we want it or not, ecology and economy goes hand in hand. You have to know how your habitat works in order to take care of it. Now, I want to go back to that same question everybody seems to ask. What do we intend to do to change the philosophy and how next generation or present generation thinks? How do you feel, based on your experience, what is your opinion of our role as scientists, as engineers, as professionals? What do you think our role is to change that? How do you feel, for example, and I'm going to suggest something to everybody here that you can do, maybe you're already doing. How do you feel about giving time, volunteering for example, I don't know, Greenpeace or whatever environmental organism? Or, for example, I volunteer for science programs with primary schools.
Can I ask you to just wrap your question so we
can answer
it? That was
the question. How do you feel about giving your time and encouraging people around you, other professionals and your students maybe, to give time to change people's mentality just by being in different social groups, such as environmental groups, school groups, whatever.
Thank you. Anyone wants to take that one up? Julian?
Okay. So I think our role as scientists and engineers, I've already talked about, is the limited role of trying to prick the illusions that we have miracle solutions to everything. I came across a really challenging answer to your question last week. I gave a talk in a session which included an ethics professor from Oxford. And he said he had looked at his income and decided that actually as a graduate student he was pretty well off. So he set a cap on his income for life at the level just above what he had when he was a graduate student. And he's then made his career out of working out what to do in giving away the rest of the money in order to make the most effect on the quality of life of those to whom he was giving money. So he compared all sorts of different ways of charitably giving away money. And I've been brewing that thought ever since I heard it, because from a broad ethics point of view, he must be right that we in the rich countries have more money than we need. And actually, what he didn't talk about, but which has really hurt me, is that he's right from an energy and emissions point of view as well. Your personal carbon footprint depends solely on your income. That is the only determinant of how much emissions you personally emit. So giving away the money might be the most ethical thing that we could do. And I have no idea how I'm going to react to that challenging statement after a year's thinking about it.
Any other comment, Greg?
Yeah, I would just say that as scientists and engineers, we have a responsibility and a role to provide good information to serve as models. I mean, we look at new technology like LED light bulbs. People are confused about it. I think you could help in terms of adoption of technology by helping people understand how it works, what its benefits are. So there's a lot you could do personally in your communities, in your family, and then, you know, just participating in various forums, whether it's in terms of supporting politicians or working at your university to help implement change. The key is that we have knowledge that is useful in informing decision making. What we're not effective at doing is disseminating that knowledge, and we need more emphasis and effort on dissemination of knowledge that we create.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Gentleman at the front.
Thank you for the presentation. My question is towards Professor Greg from the University of Michigan, but other speakers can feel free to add a comment to my question. So my question is on transportation, and specifically on the topic that you spoke of, which is life cycle energy usage, which is dominated by fuel usage. How do you deal with the dilemma that engineers, they want to design cars that are going further and further, but then you have the fact that energy usage will be increasing depending on the material that you're going to be producing. So if you're going to be using lightweight material, the cost and the energy consumption will be much higher. So how do you deal globally, that if you want to have a sustainable solution, how do you deal with the situation when you have a reverse impact on when you propose a solution? Thank you.
So are you talking about the lightweight material is more energy intensive, or are you talking about the fact that when we improve our efficiency, there could be a rebound effect?
Yep.
That basically you're going to drive more because, you know, you have a certain amount of money available for transportation. If you have a more efficient vehicle, you could then increase your VMT. So you're talking about the rebound effect?
Yeah, the rebound effect.
Yeah, so actually I should turn that over to Tim, because you've studied the rebound effect with, particularly with lighting. I don't know if you want to share some insights
it. It's an unfortunate truth that as you make
some energy services more efficient, it reduces their effective price, and making their effective price lower can stimulate more demand, something economists know very well, and engineers are just learning. It's just another example of the complicated path between our individual actions and how it plays out on the globe. And because we're not going to implement the kind of policies we know that could effectively make that obvious, we have to understand it, and we have to tell other people about it so they have a better knowledge about how they affect the planet, and so we can plan for the future with that in mind.
And I would say on the transportation that we are starting to peak and saturate in terms of our vehicle miles traveled. You only want to be in a car so much time in a day, and in general it's about an hour of travel time is sort of the world average for transportation and commuting. So I think in terms of efficiency in cars, that rebound isn't going to be that big of an effect. Thank you. Good question.
Julian, did you want to comment?
No. Thanks.
Nope. Okay. Next question. I'll ask the gentleman at the front because he was actually there first.
At the risk of sounding like a hopeless, romantic hippie, which is where I started my engineering career, I want to pose a question that arises from my lifetime experience. The one thing we haven't talked too much about tonight is pleasure. That, if we listen to the drug problems around the world, the addiction problems like for great greasy fatty food, for expensive massive cars, isn't something we've been thinking about. We seem to be addicted to consuming more as a measure of our prestige. I, as an engineer, and the students I encounter, because I frequent this university, have a great deal of pleasure in playing with their knowledge. And I'm a senior engineer who take great pleasure in the acquired culture of knowledge I carry and pass along. The question is, I've watched video games trade on pleasure, and they became a boom. People would spend tons of money on video games and slot machines and that sort of thing. Is there any way we can evaluate and propagate the pleasure that we take in solving technical puzzles to help wider groups of people understand the technologies that are embedded in our existing infrastructure, our existing processes, and perhaps get people to understand what it is, another value that comes not just in the embedded energy and the embedded money, but the embedded pleasure in reusing what has been done and kept that would answer Julian's a concern for a more enduring and longer lifetime perspective. It might answer Timothy's desire to make pink Cadillacs obsolete by making them a site for fun. And I think it might just help the whole of us in the whole world understand better how to approach minimizing our demand for physical and maximizing our demand for the intangible and low GHG pleasures. Finally, because you're in Montreal, except for Julian, I urge you to have a good meal, a low-calorie meal, one which doesn't fatten you, and learn how much the culture of pleasure is embedded here in Canada and Montreal particularly, because we haven't forgotten the old values of cuisine and tradition and heritage.
I think you're onto something there. There is no environmental cost to get together and talk to friends. You know, there's other ways to enjoy life, and we have to value those. And there are forces that want to make money off of that. Maybe, you know, we can figure out ways where some of that's okay, but we currently I don't know if derive pleasure or to use Julian's to sort of satisfy an addiction, gravitate toward material substitutes for those real pleasures. We seem to be heading in that direction, and that is getting us in trouble.
Any other comments? Julian?
I would just say that I sympathize greatly with the romantic hippie approach. I'm also increasingly moving in that direction. But I suppose the question that you've raised is one that's so far out of the bounds of one in which I have any professional training that it's one that would be better discussed in the pub rather than in a public
forum. Go on to the pub.
Thank you.
Well, I've got my nightcap here.
You'll have to do it virtually. It's one of the problems with the modern era.
And we have one last question.
This is sort of a question, but also a comment, as I'll try to be sustainable and grab the bus before it leaves, so I will not take my private car to be sustainable. I enjoyed very much all the three speakers. Wonderful. Bring us back to reality. We are going higher productions, but I am looking for this pink Cadillac as a sustainable future society for myself. I'm looking for this pink Cadillac, and I've heard the three speakers talking about the Canadian always take too much steels, they take too much energy, too much of this and that. Well, we are a natural resource base. Let us bathe in our wealth. Could we do that? Nothing wrong with that. It's just a bit of a comic here. I want to remind us, the engineers here are doing a great job being efficient and productive. Heat transfers, material used, alternate energy, all perfect. It entices the industry. The industry comes to us, comes to the engineers, and use their product. We have to remember that, I don't want to offense the gentleman that talked about the economic, let's say economic and finance to make it a little bit more rounded. Basically, there is the Graham model. We are looking for growth. So we are using all finance theory, all Nobel Prize winners that does actually push us in that direction. More productivity, more sale. And you're going to keep on looking at that dollar. How much of it will go to the producer? Maybe not 40 cents, not 10 cents, maybe 1 cent. All is going into marketing. It's the nature of things going. And I guess what I want to say, even if you look at the Keynesian theory is, again,
can I ask you to just wrap up to your question,
the demand
please?
Side of the economy and the supply side of the economy. If we put all these together, the sustainability need to move out of the domestic to the global. So then all nations will be working together cohesively in a new policy, in a new strategy to protect our Mother Earth. Thank you very much.
Does anyone want to comment on that?
Well, I strongly suggest that we all go out and have some interpersonal pleasure tonight after this event.
On that note, we will... On that note, we will close the question and answer period. I'll ask Subhashish to join me again at the podium. A reminder that although the symposium for this year ends now, the symposium for next year already has dates that I urge you to write down in your calendars, May 4th and 5th, 2015. We will be delighted to welcome you at École Polytechnique for the second annual Trottier Symposium. Subhashish.
I just wanted to say a few words about the Trottier Institute for Sustainability in Engineering and Design, or TISED. Although we are a very new institute, we have about 50 member professors who are actively engaged in technology and policy-related research and sustainability with IET and various other organizations. Our work focuses on sustainability issues in a range of areas, urban development, transportation, to manufacturing, aviation, IT, and renewable energy. Teaching incorporating sustainability more intensively into the curriculum is also a very big mandate for us. And I invite all of you to connect with us. There are many opportunities to work together. So please do connect with us through our website. And also on our website, we'll be putting up information for future seminars and publications. In closing, Miguel and I would like to express our thanks to the symposium organizing committee, which included members both from IET and TISED. A very big thank you to many who have worked behind the scenes on communications, event planning, external relations, both at McGill and at Polytechnic. I would also like to particularly thank Lauren Penny, TISED manager, Robin Devine, and our many student volunteers for all their excellent work in organizing the symposium. Merci beaucoup. Bonsoir.